need this to hurry up and, you know, be over with.
But the two sides aren't budging, with Republicans saying they will not negotiate health care until Democrats reopen the government.
There is growing scrutiny of the president's remodeling plans at the White House. Our Jennifer Jacobs has the latest.
The East Wing, as we knew it, is gone. This demolition project was much more dramatic than we first understood. That has historic preservationists very concerned. Some of them, including a National Trust for Historic Preservation, would like to put a pause on the demolition. It seems like it's too late for that. It's just gone.
President Trump is hosting the NATO Secretary General at the White House this afternoon to discuss a European peace plan for Ukraine. Russia stepped up its attacks on Ukraine yesterday, as Remy Innocencio reports.
Russia let loose across Ukraine just hours after Trump suspended that expected meeting with President Putin in Budapest. And in Kharkiv, which is just about half an hour from the border with Russia, we've been there, a drone strike hit a kindergarten. Fire and rescue rushed to that school and were able actually to save all of those children and to evacuate all of them.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio is heading to Israel this week, according to a senior State Department official. He's just the latest administration official to head to the region amid growing worries about the Gaza peace plan and whether Hamas will disarm. Longtime diplomat Dennis Ross.
The only problem here is Hamas said they won't disarm, but they said they accept the 20 points. Well, if you accept the 20 points, one of those points is disarmament and demilitarization. As I said, that's the key to Israeli withdrawal. That's the key to reconstruction.
Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth says the military has launched another strike on a drug vessel, this time in the Eastern Pacific. The other strikes have been in the Caribbean. An increasing number of home buyers getting cold feet. Business reporter Jason Brooks has the story.
Redfin reports that more than 53,000 home purchase agreements were canceled in September, up nearly 14% compared to a year ago, and accounting for 15% of the homes that went under contract last month. Once hot real estate markets in the Sun Belt are seeing the biggest rise in cancellations, buyers are having second thoughts due to hopes of getting a better deal on another home, as well as being concerned about job security.
Checking the numbers on Wall Street at this hour, they're lower. The Dow is off almost 400 points. CBS News.
Brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Not only does Progressive let you bundle your insurance, they also give you round-the-clock protection. Quote today at progressive.com.
Vanity Fair calls BritBox a delicious streamer. Collider says everyone should be watching. Catch Britain's next best series with BritBox. Stream acclaimed new originals like Code of Silence.
You read lips, right?
And Linley, based on the best-selling mystery series.
D.I. Linley, take it from here.
And don't miss the new season of Karen Piri, coming this October.
You don't look lip, please.
I'll take that as a compliment.
See it differently when you stream the best of British TV with BritBox. Watch with a free trial today.
This sandwich, it's a complete game changer. Hello, this is Mike, and a little thing I love about the Chick-fil-A Pretzel Cheddar Club is that juicy chicken with that toasty pretzel bun. That bun, it's crispy, cozy, just amazing. With the pretzel bun, the Dijon mustard, and the chicken, it makes that sweet, savory kind of combination. It's everything that you love about food rolled into one. It looks phenomenal. It tastes great. It's delicious.
Order the Pretzel Cheddar Club with Cherry Berry and Sprite for a limited time on the Chick-fil-A app. Real guests paid for their testimonial.
The Buckmaster Radio Program is paid for by Buckmaster Communications, LLC. The views expressed are not necessarily those of KVOI, Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or their sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you from The Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studios in the Bustos Media Center in central Tucson. It's the Buckmaster Show. On the other side of the glass, Brendan Kraft is engineering and producing our show. Fine young man who is really making a statement in this business. We need more young people in the broadcast business. This is Buckmaster on 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted live news and talk. We'll close out 15 full years with the radio program in the end of December. That will be 38 years for me in Tucson radio and TV. Of course, we have our worldwide live listening during the noon hour on my website, buckmastershow.com, which is also the place for 15 full years, almost 15, of podcasts, pretty much every show we've done since that first week in January of 2011 when we do our telephone interviews, the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Where does the time go, Paul Cunningham, Tucson City Councilman, Democrat, Ward 2? It just, before you know it, blink of an eye, and we're going to people's funerals.
Well, it's been a year of transitions in Tucson for sure. I feel like every week we're talking about someone else. Someone pointed out to me a couple of weeks ago, they said, you know, in your late 20s, early 30s, there's a period of time in your life mm-hmm. where you feel like every week you're going to a wedding.
Yeah.
And then a few years later, every week you feel like you're going to a christening or a mm-hmm. baby shower or mm-hmm. a first communion or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so on and so forth. And now we're at the age where I feel like once a month I'm going to a friend's funeral, a friend's dad's or mother's, a friend's parents' funeral.
Mm.
And I think that's affected a lot of us that are in, you know, in that 45 to 55 range, which is when you're doing a lot of things in Tucson. So those are some of the things going on.
How is your grief recovery coming from your father?
I'd like to think I'm doing okay. I mean, you just ask the right questions every day. Just try to do the next right thing. But I miss him. I miss him every day.
So much of talking about city county business, I kind of chuckled to myself when I see that the council's going to get together with the supervisors for a joint meeting. We've seen that before, right? I mean, so many of the problems that we have in this community, I think, can be pointed to the fact that we just have these turfs, the city and you got the county, the turf wars.
Well, I mean, it's not just turf wars at this point. At this point, a system's been set up that's pitted us against each other, and it has created some problems. We have the only county in the state that provides some 330,000 individuals with municipal services when the state draws back $80 million in state share revenues. For a lot of people who don't know, there's a law that only applies to counties of over 1 million people. So it would only apply to Maricopa and Pima County. Those are the only two counties it applies to. And what it says is that your state share revenue, your state shared sales tax revenue mm-hmm. is calculated per capita.
Mm-hmm.
And in the whole state of Arizona, other than Maricopa and Pima County, the number of dollars you get per capita is, let's say it's usually in between 600 and 900, and it depends on how much money was taken in and they divide it up. They have a whole formula, but let's just for generic discussion say it's $100. So for every person statewide, it's $100, except in Pima County and in Maricopa County. In Pima County and Maricopa County, for people who live in an incorporated area, it's about $125, and people who live in an unincorporated area, it's $75.
Hmm.
That's basically what goes on. So we have, in Maricopa County, 96% of their population lives in an incorporated area or on a tribal land. So they get full freight. They get that $125. For us, and 4%, they don't get full freight. In Tucson, 30 to 35% of our population, we do not get full freight. We just give that money back to the state. So we basically pay for...
We're losing it.
We lose it. The other thing is that there's a workaround. It used to be you needed to incorporate or create towns or create cities. I've argued for that for a really long time, but there seems to be a workaround where we could create like a municipal district just in unincorporated Pima County. It would be the Pima County Municipal District and charge, say, 2 cents a sales tax. One, we'd get the state share revenues back, but two, we'd get the other 2 cents that provide all those municipal services. And that would help immensely in having A, the county meet some of those municipal needs that they're providing, but B, it would relieve their general fund so they could focus on things like courts and public health, which is we're in a public health crisis right now, housing, which is they have their own housing department and empowerment department, and most importantly, the jail, which is totally underfunded. And We just don't have enough things and enough functions going there. So those are the, that's a big piece to this. Having another question, having another meeting to rehash it for the 19th time is fine. It's important. It's a very wonky discussion when we talk about this minutia of the state shared revenue. But I'm going to tell a quick story about that. And that is, you brought up my dad earlier. My dad was the one who wrote the tax equity law so that everybody got the same amount. Mm-hmm. And when he left the legislature, he was in the governor's office and everybody got the same amount. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until he left the governor's office that the legislature passed the law that basically singled out Pima County and said incorporate or else. Mm-hmm. Chuck Huckleberry took the state to court and over a 9-year litigation period fought that law. And after COVID, it kind of just fizzled out. So we're basically taking it in the shorts, and we shouldn't be. And we lost in court ultimately because the judge ruled, well, you know, you guys can easily go around the law by incorporating or even mm-hmm. starting a municipal district. Mm-hmm. And so that's a big piece. It's about $200 million we could have in public works that could go through to the public health system that would definitely help us meet the needs we have both on the county attorney side, the courts, prosecution, sheriff's office, all those things.
Let me ask you, if by some miracle voters were asked in Pima County, would you support metropolitan government, do you think it would pass?
I don't know if it would pass, but I think that there's ways to do it where a lot of people still want their autonomy. We have a group in Tankerville Valley right now who wants to incorporate because they want to keep the ranching vibe out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's way more to it than just pass. I think you could pass not a countywide, but more of a region, Tucson Metro region-wide, like fire district,
mm-hmm.
or you could do some things of that nature, or you could have this Pima County Municipal District. And then also on top of that, have the fire mm-hmm. district, and that would relieve some of the general funds mm-hmm. so that the money you have, and then cities could pick and choose. I think those are some pieces that would help us, but I don't think we're really ever going to have that conversation until we have more people in cities. And here's another thing, because a lot of folks from Catalina Foothills get very upset when I bring this stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a knock on people out there. I want to let folks know who are living in unincorporated Pima County, I do not blame you. You got a great setup.
Mm-hmm.
You've got less sales taxes. Mm-hmm. You've got kind of municipal government you're supposed to be kind of living on your own in the rural area. But the thing is that I'm going to push back and say you're not really living in a rural area. You're living mm-hmm. in a suburban area.
Right.
And so we should make it suburban is a town. And so we should probably do that a little more officially. Hey, it is what it is. I'm not going to slice hairs about it. I've been talking about this for 10 years. I don't think there's any reason to keep talking about it. I'm hoping other people talk about it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, why don't we talk about Mona's Danish Bakery? That is something everybody can agree on. A terrific place to grab a European style pastry, including a Danish Kringle. Steve, the owner, spent a lot of time in Europe, actually grew up in Denmark, and he worked in culinary school or went to culinary schools, worked in European pastries. He worked creating European pastries in European bakeries. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is the website. They are open Tuesday through Sunday. Doors open at 7 o'clock. Check it out, and pretty soon it'll be time to start talking about Thanksgiving. And what type of pie would you like to order from Mona's? So what about that, Paul Cunningham? Apple pie for you?
Well, apple pie, sometimes if the world was perfect, man, I'd get apple halved
pumpkin
chocolate cream.
Oh, chocolate cream. All righty, we'll take a break right here. It's Buckmaster Midweek Edition. Be right back with Paul Cunningham, Tucson City Councilman.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane in North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Check out the project list for a new $2.67 billion regional transportation plan that Pima County voters will consider next March. The RTA Next Plan proposes improvements in the greater Tucson region to reduce congestion and support cleaner air, enhance network reliability, safety, and efficiency. It will also expand transit, bike, and pedestrian options for another 20 years. Voters will be asked to okay a half-cent countywide sales tax to continue RTA improvements. The tax rate will not increase. Learn more about the proposed plan and projects at RTANext.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio talking with Paul Cunningham, Democrat representing the 2nd Ward in the city of Tucson. I see there is now a Safe City Initiative. Do you have, can you fill our listeners in on what that is about? There's so much concern, certainly, about safety in our town right now.
Well, right now, all the Safe City Initiative is a list of practices and platitudes that we need to put in place. And that's good. I mean, it's good to have a jumping off point and develop some strategies. But the bigger piece, I think, is resources. So for me, I'm focused on the resource side of that. How do we get the resources we need in place to address the crisis? How do we get the proper enforcement and proper strategies? Because some will argue what those strategies should be. Some will have arguments about what's actually public danger and what's actually public nuisance. I think there's some conflation to that. So for me, I have a different layer of strategies and resources that I'm going to put out probably this week. We're trying to get some of the details done. I'm not going to release anything that's just kind of generalizing. I want to be very specific. One of the pieces that I can say without question right now is I want to be sure that we fund police by another 68 cents an hour on top of whatever else we're doing, mm-hmm. so that our entry-level officers who start their careers in patrol are making the most in Pima County. Mm. And I want to be sure that we have a recruitment program where any officer in Pima County or even in, say, Cochise or mm-hmm. Santa Cruz who wants to move to Tucson and be a member of TPD would make a 5% increase by coming over.
So you're saying if you come to work
at the Tucson Police Department, you will be the highest paid in Pima County.
100%. That has to go without saying.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to have that 100% on all levels,
mm-hmm.
whether you're a detective, a sergeant, a first year, a second year, mm-hmm. a rookie, whatever you are,
mm-hmm.
that's what I'm looking for.
And how would that be funded?
Well, we'd move some stuff around, but for the most part, we can meet that right now in our budget. Now, if we increase our number of commissioned officers by 25, which I want to do,
mm-hmm.
right now we're authorized at 880, and I want to go to 905,
mm-hmm.
then the budget will take a bit of a hit, not much. We're talking about $1.9 to $2.3 million. I think there's some opportunity to do that. I think right now we're facing a $9 million deficit going into fiscal year 27, which balloons to a $70 million deficit a $9 million deficit at year's end for fiscal year 26, which balloons to a $70 million deficit in 2027. When I first came on the council, we had a $64 million deficit and we had a $320 million general fund. That was 20% of the general fund.
Mm-hmm.
This is about 9% of mm-hmm. the general fund. So it's a little less scary
mm-hmm.
when you're talking about proportions.
Mm-hmm.
The other piece is that there are some measures we can take kind of right away, that there's $23 million in cost avoidance we can put in right away. There's another... there's some cash management moves that can save $5 million. There's another $6 million, I think, in where our sales tax revenue projections are. I think they're a few million short. So that's the easy stuff. Then there's some tax options they've put in. I didn't vote for all of them. In fact, I voted against all of them because it was all one vote. But there's a few of them that I'm actually in favor for that don't cause a lot of pain.
Are you saying that the council could right now make that happen? With the cops and the pay?
Yeah, 100%.
You're saying that if the will were there, they could do this right away?
We have enough cash to do it right now, but it doesn't. So that's the biggest thing for me is the resources. The second thing for me is a bus safety program that at least requires a pass. And for now, just for now, I think we should have the cost of those passes covered by the passengers, whether it's $7 a month or $9 a year or $25 a year, or even for we stagger it so some folks pay $15 or $20 a month and some folks pay $5 or zero. We have a found. We can work with that. But I really believe that we have a tapper on the door, and that tapper on the door helps with the decision to get you on the bus. Finally, the last piece is an expansion of the alternative to jail program that allows individuals who have been arrested for, say, a fentanyl charge,
mm-hmm.
instead of going to jail,
mm-hmm.
where sometimes they're not getting prosecuted, mm-hmm. sometimes they're getting released right away,
mm-hmm.
our officers off the street because they mm-hmm. have to go through all that processing.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, we'd charge them as a misdemeanor,
mm-hmm.
but they'd go see a judge within an hour.
Hmm.
And the judge would say, hey, you know, Mr. Smith or Dave mm-hmm. or whoever it is, this is the second time we've caught you with fentanyl on the street. On the third or fourth time, you're really looking at some serious jail time.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, today in your initial appearance, I'd like you to be assigned to CRC or to Transition Center or to the Mission Annex. And that's a big piece to what's going on with the county and us is we want to use some of that opioid money. We got some opioid settlement money.
Mm-hmm.
And there's about, you know, there's about a $90 million left uh-huh. coming in. Uh-huh. $7 million a year for a while, uh-huh. $7 to $10 million a year. And we could use that to open the Mission Annex as a detox pod. And it would mm-hmm. have between 200 or 300 spaces,
mm-hmm.
not initially, but we'd build that out.
Mm-hmm.
And we could take folks who need to detox to that facility.
Mm-hmm.
And we would want the county and Pima County Public sure. Health to stand that up. So all those pieces together make a dent. They mm-hmm. won't help all the way. There's a whole other part of our fentanyl crisis that is totally and completely away from the fentanyl crisis,
mm-hmm.
which is the unhoused and underhoused crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't the underhoused. The unhoused are the folks that people see on the street with the shopping carts, and they have their flying signs to panhandle. Some of them might be on fentanyl, some of them not, but we can't really delineate who's who. But our issue is that the underhoused, these are folks that have jobs, they receive Social Security, they have money, and they're what I call 24/15s. That's a Tucson thing. We have a lot of jobs out there in Tucson that are minimum wage, 24 hours a week. That's all that some of the employers will offer.
Right.
And they can't afford to get a place, even if they have two roommates kind of roughing it in a two-bedroom thing. So
they could get the job, but they wouldn't have a place to live.
Man, I've seen it 100 times. We get somebody into detox. They go to the 28-day sobriety. They get out. They do sober living for a little bit through Wildcat House. They're 6 months in. They have a job. They're doing great. I go in and check on them. I remember you, Mr. Cunningham, when you saw me and you promised me you'd help me, and I'm doing good. And I'm like, that's right, Gabriel. I'm so proud of you, dude. I'm so excited. And then I'm told, well, we can't really get him out of Wildcat because he has an old charge from TEP, and he can't find a place that will take him and his dog or him and his kids or whatever. There's all kinds of different scenarios where rehousing people after they've been down and out, there's so many barriers to it. And that's, I think, that's the other side of this challenge, is that not only we're really not being as persuasive as we need to be with the folks who aren't trying, we're being really frustrating for the people who actually are. And man, when you're burning both ends like that, it becomes a crisis. And so we've got to have clarity in how we recognize that and come up with a plan that meets and fills, you know, those two pieces. To me, I think if we got those two bookends done, we'd make a significant dent in some of the other things and some of the low-hanging fruit problems we're having in this system with, you know, not having the right computer systems lining up in the social service side, or not having police and sheriff, TPD and other agencies be able to cover each other where the lines are
not being on the same page.
Yeah, like that's easier. That's easier stuff to do. But when we can't handle the two big things on the ends, we really can't seem to clean up the little stuff. And so it's kind of like we've got to have a system that everybody understands and is bought in place. It's just like rebuilding a football team. And then you start working on the details and the execution and making sure. And I think that's what's good in what is probably a cruel joke, heavenly metaphor. That's what's going on with Arizona football right now, is that they've got a great system in place. They got great coaches. They got great kids. They just got to tighten up some of those details. And I think we're going to win a few more games this year. So that's I'm seeing it in that. I know that I'm a big sports guy, so people are probably making fun of me about making a sports metaphor here. But bottom line is that we've got to have the underhoused empowerment side, and we have to have the fentanyl addicted persuasion side, both rooted and ready to go, and very systemic. And if we can get there, I think we'll see some changes.
What are you hearing? We've only got about a minute about the RTA, and do you think this has some life in it?
I believe it does.
The RTA next, people will vote on it in March. You think it could pass?
I think it could pass. I'm cautiously optimistic. I think there's there's just a lot of distrust out there with anything in government from both sides. I mean, you've got one group questioning everything the federal government does now, and you've got another group questioning everything that the city government does. And so it's like, well, what is it? Both? Is it, which one is it? And even worse, you have situations where municipal governments are blaming states, and states are blaming the feds, and feds are blaming the cities, and we just that modicum of civility and open door and collaboration that has to be there. I will say this. I don't get in too much trouble. I want to say that I'm on record endorsing Joanne Mendoza in the congressional race, but I will say at least I have communication with Congressman Siskamani. At least we speak. And that's a lot compared to what goes on in other jurisdictions.
All right. So all this talk about trying to fire the coach because he's lost a couple of ball games, football, give the guy a chance, right?
Look, man, we lost two games on the last play. I mean,
I agree with you.
Look, if you want to have a conversation at the end of the season, if we're 4-8, fine. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think we're going to win a few games.
Yeah.
And mark your calendars. I think we beat ASU this year. So
wow,
let's go.
Wow, that ought to be very interesting. Hope it happens.
Me
Paul
too.
Cunningham, thanks. Always a pleasure. All right, midway point of the Buckmaster Show. Will Humble, former Arizona health director, is coming up on the live line right after this.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and the Green Thing is Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Everything you need for your garden, and some beautiful garden accessories at Zocalo Village, including the world's, how about Arizona's? Maybe it's the world's largest selection of pottery. I don't know, but I know that they know, and they're right about this. Arizona's largest selection of pottery over at Green Things, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. When we do our live line, the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, let's go now on the live line. Our once-a-month guest on public health, he's been in the business a long time, Will Humble, the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. He spent 35 years in public health, including more than two decades at the Arizona Department of Health Services, where he served in various capacities, including the top guy at the agency. He was the director from 2009 to 2015. Will, how are you? And welcome back after your foreign travels that included France and Croatia.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. And also welcome back you. I know you're a travel, you have a travel bug like I do.
I do. We had a great time up in Sun Valley, paid our respects to Papa Hemingway, and went by his gravesite there at Ketchum. Actually, got a rare look at Papa's last residence, his home there in Ketchum, normally off limits, but we found a local guy who knew a back way up the hill, so we got a look at that home. And being a big Hemingway fan, that was exciting. And then we went up to, flew up to Vancouver, British Columbia, and up to Whistler, where the Canadian Maple Leafs were in their full glory. It was a great trip.
Yeah, that sounds good. You know, what, this is years ago, but when I was in Florence, Italy, you know, in the Hemingway books, he always talks about, in one of the books, I think Farewell to Arms or one of them, he talks about Harry's Bar in Venice.
Yeah.
Remember that? So I tracked it down. It's still there. And so I went in, and but it turned out it was like a 15-euro cappuccino. So.
Yeah. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that that is actually, in the book, The Sun Also Rises.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds right.
Okay. All right. But and by the way, had a very interesting conversation. My fiance and myself out for a beautiful walk up at Whistler, and ran into a gentleman who has been a long time health practitioner, a general practitioner in Vancouver. And we talked about the Canadian health system, and he says, "Hey, you Americans really, you don't understand it. You're giving it a bad rap about that it takes forever to get certain services." So he certainly defended it, and he'd been in the system a long time, and he thinks it's a good deal.
What's a good deal?
The Canadian system.
Oh, yeah. Well, you have to be more patient there. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, Canadians are more patient people than Americans. So they're willing to tolerate a 2-week wait for an MRI or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I just think Americans are too impatient to tolerate a Canadian system.
Yeah. And of course,
I think he's right, but you got to be a lot more patient than Americans.
And if you have the money, it is many ways a 2-tier system, but
yeah.
Well, we are kind of here too with concierge medicine that's really taking hold. He said that if you want the services and, you can pay, I think it's like maybe $5,000 a year, you can get the priority system up there.
Yeah, so there's a shortcut up there, and then some of them just, fly to Chicago or something.
Yeah, there you go. So how about, what did you learn over there in Europe?
It was just so fun. Both of my kids were able to come. They're in their late 20s, early 30s, and my wife. And so, it's just nice to wander around stuff that's 2,000 years old, and culturally and everything. And I also kind of, one of the things I like to do when I travel is just pay attention to like how their systems work. So I actually did write a couple blogs about how the French public health and healthcare system work and the Croatian system. So if people are ever curious about how their public health and healthcare systems work, everything from inspecting restaurants to, surgery for cancer or whatever, and emergency medicine and that kind of stuff. So I put those together up on the blog.
When we were in Sun Valley, I don't know why there are so many young Croatians who are working there. Maybe it has something to do with a work visa, but several of them said to us, have you ever been to Europe? And of course, I said, yes. Can you list the countries? So I listed off the countries, and they said, you're actually missing the best country. And they said,
Croatia.
And they said, the scenic beauty is outstanding. Is that where Split is located?
Yeah, we were in Split and then in Dubrovnik, right along there. Those are both coastal port cities. They're both, 2,000 years old, or a little bit more than that. And so, yeah, those are the coastal. Then Zagreb is the capital. That's more inland. We didn't make it there. We just made it to Dubrovnik and Split. But, yeah, you're right. There's it's really scenic, but also a lot, like, tons of stuff to do. If you like, you know, wandering around, you know, 2,000-year-old ruins and kind of pretending to figure out what life might have been like back then, I like that stuff.
And the healthcare systems themselves in Europe are pretty much the same country by country, or do they vary sometimes dramatically?
Well, they tend to have more universal coverage, like a Medicare type system in most of those in terms of healthcare. But the rest of it is actually actually different in many different ways. Like, some of them are more centralized, where everything is handled out of the central government. That's more like Croatia. And then there's places like France, which are more, you know, I forgot the word for basically regions or counties, but a lot of the work in those parts in France are more local, like county type jurisdictions that handle everything, you know, from restaurant inspections to healthcare services, to emergency medicine and EMS and all that.
Let's talk a little bit about, since we talked a month or so ago about the access now to the COVID and the flu shot and all of that, what do we know about adults getting shots now, and will they be covered?
So it should be covered now. The vast majority of people who have health insurance should be able to get it covered. It should be relatively easy to make an appointment. Yes, the National Advisory Committee did put some additional boundaries around recommendations for the vaccine, or they called it joint clinical decision making. It's a bureaucratic term. But Governor Hobbs and the State Health Department, and I think Dr. Carmona down there in Tucson, signed the standing order that allows people, except little tiny kids, should be able to get the vaccine appointment because, in part, of the standing order that Dr. Carmona signed. So it should be fairly easy. I'm getting mine next week. I'm taking Luke in for his my kid with Down syndrome. He's getting both his shots Tuesday. So appointments are open, and now's actually late October is an ideal time, because for both influenza and COVID, your antibody titer will spike in November around the Thanksgiving period when you need it the most. So it lasts through December, January, and February.
So I had COVID, unfortunately, in mid-July, and I had a shot just 3 or 4 months previous. I interviewed Dr. Cullen, and she thought that it would be prudent for me to get the shot now in November.
Well, I'm going to argue with her. She's a doctor, and I'm not.
I know.
I'd wait till like January, honestly.
Huh? So you think the antibodies are after you get it are strong enough to hold you that long?
Well, yeah, because you were infected in July, so that was that was probably the Nimbus or Stratus version.
Yeah.
So it's still the strain that's circulating, and you when you get the actual infection, you have more than just the antibodies to the spike protein. You've got the neocapsid coat antibody. So it's a little bit more robust coverage in terms of reinfection.
Good to know.
Especially since we haven't had there hasn't been a new strain that's popped up since Nimbus Stratus in July. If you had it in July, that's the strain you had. So I'm not going to argue with her, but prudent may be the right word, but I would wait till January so you have a little bit more longevity on the back end.
All right. I will.
Not longevity to your life, but
I know. I will certainly weigh that, Will Humble. Stick around. We've got segment number 4 coming up with Will right after this.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
A proposed $2.6 billion regional transportation plan will be funded by a half-cent sales tax if Pima County voters approve the plan and tax next March for another 20 years. The tax rate will not increase. Funding from the 2006 voter-approved plan is expected to bring a $3.67 billion economic impact to the greater Tucson region. The sales tax investment for RTA Next will lead to a similar economic impact and more than 88,000 jobs over the next 20-plus years. Learn more about RTA Next funding and proposed projects at RTANext.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. How about a weekend getaway? Well, actually, if you're not doing anything and you have the time, how about a midweek getaway? Just jump in the car or hop on the motorcycle and take off for Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Start your planning now by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Ton of stuff to do over there. A lot of outdoor activities like the Gila National Wilderness right in the backyard of Silver City. All right, let's continue our conversation with Will Humble, the former Arizona Director of Health. He's now the Executive Director of the Arizona Public Health Association. One of the things that is of a concern always for people who live in rural Arizona and really rural areas generally is telemedicine. And I wonder how that is all shaping up, Will, in light of the turnover and all the turmoil with the federal government when it comes to health care.
Yeah, you know, before the pandemic, telemedicine existed, telehealth existed, but it was really pretty limited. And during the pandemic, it became obvious that we really had to have a much more robust telehealth system in the U.S. And so both Medicaid, which is our state access program, and Medicare got a lot more, they really started to embrace telehealth. And over time, patients and doctors, by the way, really started to appreciate and understand how valuable telehealth can be for certain kinds of conditions, not, you know, acute infections necessarily, but things like chronic disease management, diabetes, sometimes primary care visits, psychology, psychiatry, those kinds of things. It became really obvious that it was a really helpful tool and a positive return on investment. In other words, there was very little fraud identified with it. And so during the pandemic, that really came in force. And people have built an expectation that, especially in rural areas, especially for seniors who either don't drive anymore or maybe know they shouldn't be driving, or it's just difficult to get in and out of the car, telehealth has become super important. And so during the public health emergency, Medicare was actually paying for telehealth services, but that expired on October 1st this year. So your listeners out there who have tried to make telehealth appointments with either their primary care doc or even like their cardiologist or others, there's a good chance they're no longer able to make those kinds of appointments because Medicare won't pay for it anymore. And, you know, there's bipartisan support in Congress for changing the rules permanently so that telehealth is possible, along with, you know, building a more robust system to prevent fraud and so forth. But sadly, that has expired and it's stuck down in Congress right now. Obviously, the House isn't even in session and there's no budget. But more and more seniors, I'm sure as we speak, are becoming frustrated that they can no longer make those telehealth appointments with their doctors anymore. And it's not, don't get mad at your doctor if that's happening, and don't get mad at the receptionist. It's not their fault. It's the people who represent you in Congress who have been unwilling or unable to fix this and make telehealth possible again in Medicare.
What about these increases we're hearing about, these, in some cases, astronomical increase to health benefits and premiums? What are we hearing about that? What can we do?
Yeah, the big premium increases that you're talking about are for the 400,000 people in Arizona who have their insurance through the marketplace insurance, healthcare.gov. Some people call it Obamacare. During the pandemic, there was also what are called enhanced advanced premium tax credits that really made the health insurance through the marketplace a lot more affordable. And that is also, that's also hung up in Congress. In fact, that's what, honestly, that this the lack of a budget is often, I think, mostly blamed on, you know, whether or not to extend the enhanced advanced premium tax credits. But as of right now, it looks like certain people are going to have huge either dollar amount increases in their premiums or high percentage increases in their premiums. So lower income people, say people making $35,000-$40,000 a year, they make too much for Access Our Medicaid program, but are buying marketplace health insurance, the percentage increase in what they pay is going to go up a lot, like maybe even 100%. In dollars, that means going from, say, you know, $250 a month to $500 a month, something like that. But as you go up the income scale, people that make, say, for example, $90,000 a year buying marketplace health insurance, they'll have their premiums go up 50%, but for them, you know, it's a bigger increase, like could be even a thousand a month increase in their health insurance. So that's the debate in Washington. You know, should the federal government extend the enhanced advanced premium tax credit or shouldn't they? And some of your listeners are going to believe both ways, I'm sure. But bottom line, that answers your question, is that the tax, you know, that the assistance with those premiums is ended at this point, and that's what Congress is fighting about right now in Washington.
Well, a lot of people are not going to, if let's be realistic, a lot of people are not going to be able to afford health insurance again, and they're going to wind up where? The emergency room, right, Will?
Well, for acute infections, yeah. But, you know, there's a lot of people that kind of misunderstand, like, this uncompensated care thing. Like, if you show up in the emergency department, they are by law required to stabilize you. That's it. Like, if you show up at the, you know, emergency department and you got back pain and they figure out that you've got a kidney cancer, it's not like you're going to get, a transplant or surgery for that kidney. You get stabilized and released, you know. And so, yeah, they go to the emergency department, but that doesn't mean you're going to get care if it's something bad. Yeah, if you get stuck by a needle from your cactus in the backyard or something, yeah, you're going to get that kind of treatment. But if you got something bad like leukemia, that's it. You're uncovered. So it's it, it going bare is rolling the dice and saying, I'm not going to have insurance. That's a dangerous proposition, I think.
So emergency room care is really about, are you saying stabilization? Is that the key?
Yeah, well, that's what they're required. There's a law called EMTALA, and I can't tell you what it means, what it stands for. Mm-hmm. But what it means is that when people show up to the emergency department, the EDs are required by law to stabilize that patient. So if they come in with breathing problems or they're dehydrated or something like that, they're supposed to treat them until they're stable and then they release them. But it doesn't mean that they have an obligation to send them upstairs and get them a surgery, for a chronic medical condition or give them treatment for leukemia or something like that. That's not an obligation of the emergency department. So, if people think they're going to get full service care in the ED, they're wrong. You're going to get stabilized and released, but then you're really stuck trying to figure out how you're going to get the actual treatment that you really need if it's something worse.
Do they have to serve everyone? Do they ask for citizenship papers?
Yeah, they have to serve everybody. So they have to stabilize everybody. But it doesn't mean that everyone gets treated. I just want to make that clear. Yes. Then the answer is yes.
All right. So generally, Will, I've got about 1 minute left. Going back to the vaccine season, where folks are not going to have to fill out a lot of paperwork, especially those over 65, correct?
Oh, you mean to get the influenza and the COVID vaccine?
Yeah.
No, it should be just like last year. It came close. If the standing order wasn't put in place, and as I mentioned, Dr. Camorna signed that, then, you can think actually your seniors can thank Dr. Carmona for that because he signed that standing order that's making it possible and giving cover for all of the pharmacies around the state to actually provide that vaccine and make it easy for seniors.
Any indications on the flu season? Usually a harbinger is the Southern Hemisphere. Have you heard anything?
You know what? If I knew you were going to ask me that, I would have looked. But I haven't looked, so I don't know what's going on in Australia and in Brazil and New Zealand and Argentina. Those are the best surveillance areas that I look at.
All right. Thank you, Will. I'll talk to you next month. Thanks.
All right. Take care. Bye.
All right. Will Humble with us on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Bill Buckmaster wrapping it up here on our midweek edition. Coming up on Friday, our Friday Focus interview, Tim Tamir will be with us, the city manager, and scheduled to be with me. Paul Ingram from TucsonSentinel.com. Hope everybody has a great afternoon.